Palestinian civil defense crews retrieved the bodies of more than 200 Palestinians buried by Israeli forces in a mass grave inside the Nasser Hospital in Gaza's Khan Yunis. Hamas says the U.S. hostile approval of billions of dollars in new military aid to Israel confirmed Washington's official partnership in the genocide in Gaza. And the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that recent retaliatory drone and missile strikes against Israel was proof of the will of the Iranian nation and the armed forces. I'm your host, Behrouz Najafi. Welcome. Now, Palestinians continue to endure a U.S.-Israeli genocidal war in the besieged Gaza Strip, the scene of death and destruction on a daily basis. In the latest attack, Israeli warplanes targeted two residential buildings in Rafah City, killing 19 Palestinians, including 14 children. The Ministry of Health in Gaza reporting that 48 Palestinians were killed and 79 injured in Gaza in one day. And that brings the number of victims since October 7th to a staggering number of more than 34,000. The number of those wounded has also risen to around 77,000. On Saturday, the Palestinian Civil Defense said the bodies of some 200 Palestinians buried by Israel in a mass grave were recovered inside Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis. The Hamas political bureau chief says that the Israeli regime is the main cause of the failure of the ceasefire talks.
Despite tens of sessions and communications via our mediators, the Zionist enemy until this point has not agreed to a ceasefire in Gaza. All they want is the return of hostages so they can continue the war on Gaza, and this cannot happen. They want Hamas and the resistance to agree to maps referencing the deployment of the Israeli army, as if to say we are legitimizing the occupation of the Strip or a part of the Strip, and this cannot happen. Zionist forces must completely withdraw from the Gaza Strip.
In an interview with a Turkish news agency, Ismail Haniyeh said that while Hamas showed flexibility in negotiations, Israel took an uncompromising stance. He added that Israel does not want the displaced people to return to northern Gaza. Haniyeh said that Hamas does not insist on being the sole authority in the administration of Gaza. It's part of the Palestinian people and can establish a national unity government. He warned Israel against a possible ground invasion of Rafah, saying that resistance fighters are ready to confront any aggression. Now, Hamas political bureau chief Ismail Haniyeh has visited Turkey in the midst of rumors of the leader's repositioning from Qatar. Haniyeh was warmly received by the Turkish president at his residence in Istanbul, where the two officials discussed a host of issues, including the delivery of humanitarian aid into Gaza. Correspondent Rashan Saglam has a report.
Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan received the head of the Hamas political bureau, Ismail Haniyeh, in Istanbul. During the meeting that lasted for more than 2.5 hours, the two sides discussed the Israeli aggression on Gaza, ways and measures to ensure uninterrupted and sufficient delivery of humanitarian aid to Gaza, and the lasting peace in the West Asia region. During the meeting, President Erdogan stated that amid ongoing tensions in the region, it is important to keep the world's attention on Gaza and not allow the Israeli regime to achieve political gains from its standoff with Iran. In a statement published by the Turkish presidency, Erdogan said, "It is vital that Palestinians act with unity in this process. The strongest response to Israel and the path to victory lie in unity and integrity."
Today's meeting was very important for both Turkey and Hamas to set ground for the upcoming changes. We all know now Qatar is hosting Hamas Bureau and leaders as well as playing the role of mediator in negotiations with Israel. While there is a pressure from Washington for Hamas to leave Qatar, and there is the question of where will Hamas go now, we know that the relation of Hamas and Syria is getting better, and it already has a good relation with Iran. But I don't think they are a choice, and for that, Turkey will be the best option.
Analysts say Turkey will not only be hosting Hamas movement leaders and bureau, but will also take the lead in mediating to reach a lasting solution for the Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Turkey is trying to play a very important role that is bigger than working on reaching a ceasefire in Gaza. It is rather solving the Israeli-Palestinian conflict and trying to reach a lasting solution. The 7th of October was a turning point to start working on reaching a lasting solution, and I think Turkey's role is a key for it to maintain good relations with all sides.
Hamas had an office in Turkey since 2011, and Turkey mediated in exchange of prisoners. Turkish president maintains warm relations with Haniyeh and says he will always defend the Palestinian cause. Today's meeting takes place against the backdrop of Qatar potentially stepping back from ceasefire talks. This development could create a vacancy that Ankara is well positioned to fill, given Turkey's established relations, particularly with the Hamas movement, which many view as a strategic advantage. Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Meantime, Hamas has strongly condemned the U.S. House approval of a bill providing $26 billion in military assistance to Israel. The movement says that new aid confirms Washington's official partnership in the Gaza genocide. Hamas noted that the Biden administration bears legal and political responsibility for the war crimes committed against Palestinians. The move violates international law and is also a green light for Israel to continue its brutal aggression in Gaza. The new bill would allow the regime to upgrade its missile systems, replenish its military equipment, and acquire advanced weapons. Israeli forces have shot dead two more Palestinians in the West Bank as the regime continues with crackdown. The killings took place at the entrance to the village of Beit Einun near the southern city of Al-Khalil. Israeli forces then stormed the village and raided several homes. The army claims that one of the Palestinians tried to stab a soldier and the other opened fire at the regime's forces. Now that after Israeli troops killed 14 Palestinians in the Nur Shams refugee camp in a raid which began on Thursday. Since the beginning of the onslaught on Gaza, Israel has performed near daily operations in the West Bank. Around 500 Palestinians have been killed in the regime's attacks there. Our correspondent Mona Kendall joined us a short while ago from Ramallah with details of the Israeli crimes against Palestinians in the occupied West Bank.
The Israeli military declared this morning that two Palestinians arrived at the Beit Einun intersection. It's northeast Al-Khalil at the entrance of the Palestinian village of Beit Einun. One Palestinian had a gun. He opened fire at the Israeli soldiers there, and the other Palestinian had a knife, and he was running towards the Israeli forces to stab them. However, the Israeli troops at the scene immediately opened fire at the two Palestinians, and they neutralized them. This means that they opened fire, shot, and killed them. This is what the Israeli military is saying. The Israeli military is also saying that none of the Israeli forces had been wounded. The identity of those two Palestinians is still unknown. The Israeli forces have confiscated the body, and they themselves who informed the Palestinians that the two Palestinians who arrived at the Beit Einun intersection tried to stab and to open fire at Israeli soldiers to carry out an anti-Israeli operation. They were shot and killed. However, they did not reveal about their identity. Today, Sunday, there's a general strike and a state of mourning had been declared here in the occupied West Bank to mourn the killing of at least 14 Palestinians were shot and killed by the Israeli forces in Tul Kerem, in Nur Shams refugee camp, an operation that lasted for almost 3 days since Thursday.
Now, the leader of the Iran Islamic Revolution says that the country's retaliatory operation against Israel demonstrated its resolve internationally. Ayatollah Khamenei says that the establishment of this willpower is what has angered the enemy. The leader made the comments while meeting with top military commanders. He held the armed forces for giving a good impression of their capacities and power and a commendable image of the Iranian nation. The leader was referring to the massive missile and drone strikes on Israel after the regime's deadly attack on the Iranian embassy in Damascus. The Islamic Republic of Iran has always advocated for a free Palestine and blasted the Israeli regime for its aggression against Palestinians. But it's not just Palestine that Iran has supported. The country has always stood for the oppressed as well. In our explainer program, we reviewed how Operation True Promise added to Iran's popularity.
The notion of imperialism and colonialism are two terms that are almost synonymous. At the same time, two countries come to mind, and that is the U.S. and the U.K. Although the U.S. pursues an imperialistic approach more than the U.K., one country has stood in its way, perhaps like no other country in the world, and that is the Islamic Republic of Iran. Maybe before talking about imperialism or colonialism, a definition check is in order. The textbook definition is a policy of extending a country's power and influence through colonization, the use of military force, or other means. Why would Iran have the coveted position of standing in the way of U.S. imperialism? Well, for starters, the 1979 Islamic Revolution of Iran. The U.S.'s puppet in the region at the time, the deposed Reza Shah, was overthrown, which paved the way for the Islamic Republic to carve out different ways to stand up to U.S. imperialism. From the very start, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, announced its support for the Palestinians. Now, within that context, Imam Khomeini positioned itself for standing up for the oppressed, one of the pillars of the Islamic Republic. With the coming of Imam Khomeini, Iran left foreigners' domination behind so that people would determine their own destiny. Also, the system in the Islamic Republic turned into a model for the freedom-seeking nations across the world. This was particularly evident during the Islamic Awakening that swept across West Asia and also North Africa, which referred to Iran as their model. Well, in simple terms, the ideals and policies of the Islamic Republic broke the status quo carried out by most countries. It spelled a new world order. As such, it became a hope for all nations in the world who want to be liberated and not dominated by world powers, especially the U.S. and the U.K. as examples. Well, fast forward to today, and the fruits of anti-imperialism are seen across West Asia region and across the world. The anti-imperialist uprisings in the world, like in Africa, Ghana, Burkina Faso, Mali, and Niger as examples, and the formation of the resistance fronts are part of the expansion of the culture of the Islamic Revolution evident in West Asian countries. There are now countries that have adopted or taken Iran's approach when it comes to standing up to U.S. imperialism. Cuba and Venezuela, just a couple examples that have in their nationalistic anthem and slogan that approach. This is while other superpowers like China and Russia have challenged the West and the U.S. system of governance from politics to finances, leading to a multipolar world, mainly due to U.S. destructive policies. Trade blocs have now been formed, which exclude the U.S. and the EU, and even exclude the monetary system that's comprised of the dollar or the SWIFT system. This is most evident in the BRICS grouping of countries, which has promoted de-dollarization and is rapidly gaining popularity, grouping that Iran joined recently. But Iran has gained immense popularity due to its support for Palestine. Anti-Israeli protests in support of Palestine put Iran in the spotlight, along with the West Asia resistance fronts. Also, Iran's counterattack when anti-terror icon General Qasem Soleimani was assassinated by the U.S., or its recent Operation True Promise, which was followed by world applause, added to Iran's popularity.
Now, tensions running high between Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah and Israel in southern Lebanon. On Sunday, Hezbollah targeted buildings used by Israeli forces in the settlement of Shomera. Our correspondent in Lebanon, Mayim Saleh, tells us more.
Now we know that they have targeted two residents that are being used by Israeli soldiers in the settlement of Shumera. Now, Shumera is considered by the Lebanese government a Lebanese town, the town of Tarbiha, So it is one of seven Lebanese towns that are considered Lebanese-occupied territory. Yesterday we saw them also target another area, which is the town of Salha. We also have another operation for the resistance where they targeted espionage and technological devices in the barracks of Dubib. Seems that Hezbollah is also very much alert on when the Israelis do plant new devices and therefore they target them. And this is also a part of the long war. This is definitely a war where you have the intelligence element and the factor of the intelligence issue very significant. And when the Israelis were blinded at the border, they needed to use other instances and devices. They also had the issue of the Merom base, they needed to use that also to get intelligence. Hezbollah made it clear that they also targeted that base as well because they, of course, in retaliation for the heavy striking deep in the heart of Lebanon, but also to tell the Israelis that they have the ability to be able to target their devices and their basically their frequencies and all their attempts to get intelligence from Lebanon.
The U.S. president has signed into law a bill that extends the government's warrantless spying powers for 2 years. Joe Biden signed Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act after it passed the Senate by 60 against 34 votes. The move was slammed by privacy advocates inside and outside Congress. They say it allows intelligence agencies to spy on the communications of non-U.S. citizens, including communications on such service providers as Google. Activist group Demand Progress says the law is a dangerous tool in the hands of any president and a historic mark of shame. The Brennan Center for Justice says the law is shameful and a gift to any president who would wish to spy on political enemies, journalists, and ideological opponents. The Islamic Resistance in Iraq says it's carried out a fresh drone strike against Israeli positions in the occupied Syrian Golan Heights. The Iraqi movement says it hit a vital target in the occupied heights. The attack was in response to massacres committed by the Israeli regime against Palestinian civilians, including women and children. The group says it will continue the operations against Israeli targets. In recent months, the Islamic Resistance in Iraq has conducted a series of attacks against Israeli positions. It's also hit U.S. military bases in Iraq and neighboring Syria in retaliation for Washington's support for the Israeli genocide in Gaza. And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of law.
Listeners special. In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warmest greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, April 21st, 2024. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us which program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. So please keep us company until the end of the program. And as yesterday, Ordibehesht first was marked in Iran as the national commemoration day of the renowned Iranian poet Saadi Shirazi, born in Shiraz, southern Iran. In this edition of Listeners Special, I just wanted to talk about this renowned Iranian poet. Abu Muhammad Moslehuddin bin Abdullah Shirazi, known by his pen name Saadi, was one of the major Iranian poets of the medieval period. Saadi is known as a mystic and metaphysician in the history of Iranian literature. He is recognized for the quality of his writings and for the depth of his social and moral thoughts. The ancient scholar has gained worldwide fame, not only in Farsi-speaking countries, but in Western societies, with his poems being quoted in a multitude of sources. Saadi, who lost his father in childhood, experienced a youth of poverty and hardship. He left his hometown of Shiraz at a young age for Baghdad to pursue a better education. His first experience of education was at the Nizamiya University of Baghdad, where he studied Islamic sciences, theology, law, history, and Arabic literature. He traveled to different countries such as Anatolia, Syria, Egypt, and Iraq for 30 years. He also visited Quds, Mecca, and Medina. The master of speech, as he is called, was a man of learning and traveling. He mingled with people from different groups, from intellectuals, merchants, preachers, farmers, and ordinary people to Sufi dervishes and even thieves trying to learn and study and also preach and advise people to gravitate to wisdom and morality. Returning to Shiraz, southern Iran, as an elderly man, Saadi was greatly welcomed and respected by the ruler and the prominent figures of the city. He spent the rest of his life in his birthplace, Shiraz, till he passed away in around 1292. Of course, during the program, I will talk about Saadi, this Iranian poet, more. For the time being, let's see who has sent us a reception report. In this edition of Listeners Special, we read the names of those of you who has sent us reception report, including Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh, D.K. Hazarik from India, Mizanur Rahman, one of our old and regular listeners from Bangladesh, who has sent us reception reports. So, Muhammad, DK, and Mizanur Rahman, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for sending us these reception reports. And as you may know, these reception reports are very helpful to us at IRIB English Radio, because these reception reports actually help us promote the quality of our programs. Thank you very much. And Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us a piece of email. From the US, we've received an email from Muhammad Khaku, one of our old and regular listeners. And Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh also has sent us a piece of email. I will read this email later during the program. Stay with us, please. So let's talk about the masterpieces of Saadi, the renowned Iranian poet. Saadi's best known masterpieces are Bustan. Bustan means the orchard. Bustan was completed in 1257, and also Golestan, which means the flower garden, which was completed in 1258. Bustan, as his best known work, was completed in 1257, as I said. It is quiet in verse, including 4,000 verses in 183 stories about the virtues such as justice, kindness, love, modesty, liberty, generosity, satisfaction, and happiness, and also some of the practices of dervishes, addressing all people to have a better and happier life. A year after the completion of Bustan, Saadi composed his masterpiece Golestan. Golestan comprised of 8 chapters, which is mainly in prose. The book widely addresses king's morality, dervish's behavior, benefits of contentment, silence and talking in proper time, love and youthfulness, weakness in old age, and education. Saadi attempts to advise people to live freely and to improve the quality of their lives in Golestan. It is one of the most effective books in prose in Farsi literature. Saadi's other works include ghazals. Ghazals are love poems or lyrics, sonnets. Qasides, which are longer mono-rhyme poems or odds. Quatrains and short pieces in prose in both Farsi and Arabic. He is known as one of the greatest ghazal writers of Farsi poetry, besides Hafez, who is one of our renowned Iranian poets. So, for the time being, we just come back to your emails and letters from around the world. And this time we've received an email, as I said, in the introduction part of our program. Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India has sent us a piece of email. Mr. Anand Mohan Bain says, I'm sending this mail from Bilai, Chhattisgarh, India. I like your program, listeners special. It's a good program. I wrote many times that your reception is not good in our area. I hope things get better. Kind regards. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Anand Mohan Bain from India. Thank you very much for writing to IRIB English Radio. And thank you for your support and commitment. You said you like the program, listeners special. Actually, your positive vibes actually give us the energy to continue our path. Appreciations to you, Anand Mohan Bain from India. So, you mentioned that the reception is not good in your area, and we will inform this notice to our technicians and engineers, and if the trouble is on our behalf, we will fix it soon. Don't worry about it. Thank you again, Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Thank you again. Welcome back. So, I was talking about the Iranian renowned poet Saadi. Saadi elaborately distinguishes between the spiritual and the mundane aspects of life in his works. He tries to visualize the deepest meanings of life in the most tangible context and close to conversational language as far as possible, in such a way that even common people can get the most out of his writings. He's a well-known poet among world scholars. Goethe and Underdo Ryer presented Saadi to the West for the first time in 1634. The first complete translation of Golestan in English was done by Sir Richard Francis Burton, for your information, actually. In one of Saadi's most well-known immortal poetries, he considers all humans as different parts of a whole body, regardless of social barriers and race, saying, "Human beings are members of a whole, in creation of one essence and soul. If one member is afflicted with pain, other members uneasy will remain. If you have no sympathy for human pain, the name of human you cannot retain." It was great. It was great. It was about the unity of all humans, which is assimilated to a whole body with different parts, actually. Okay, let's come back to our emails. As I said, Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad says, "We are regular listeners and well-wishers of your radio. I have been listening to Radio Tehran's programs for a long time, sending opinions, giving suggestions. IRIB Radio is our favorite radio station. We also love Iran. So glory and success of Iran is considered as glory and success of Islam to us. Islam, Iran, and Radio Tehran are the heartbeat of our hearts." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you, Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh, and thank you very much for writing such a great email to IRIB English Radio. Thank you for your compliments. It was great. Please accept our EQSL as confirmation to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Muhammad Sahadat Hussain from Bangladesh. Welcome back. So, I was saying, Saadi's tomb is located in southern Shiraz, southern Iran. His mausoleum is called Saadiye. It is one of Iran's major tourist attractions. Much think is left to talk about Saadi, but time is short. And now, I prefer to read one of your emails. Muhammad Khaku from the United States has sent us a piece of email. Muhammad Khaku is one of our old and regular listeners who says, "The Iranian response of Zionist Israel was defensive, while Zionist Israel had violated Article 22 of Vienna Convention and Article 51 of the UN Charter by bombing the Iranian embassy in Damascus on April 1st. The world has watched anxiously in anticipation of Iran's response. Now Iran fired a volley of drones and missiles at the Israeli-occupied lands, accompanied by an orchestra of similar calibers out of Lebanon, Syria, Yemen, and Iraq. Israel is politically isolated and increasingly seen as a pariah state with unprecedented global condemnation and genocide charge to be brought to the docket of the International Court of Justice by South Africa. Israel does not care about the United Nations or the International Court of Justice. It is absolutely a pariah state after bombing the Iranian consulate. We are beginning to see the downfall of U.S. hegemony globally. This may be one of the straws that breaks the camel's back. The U.S. or Europeans have no ethical, moral, or even legal platform to lecture any country anymore. Israel and America have sown trouble and are reaping the whirlwinds of increased trouble ahead for them." First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the Islamic Republic of Iran, to you, Muhammad Khaku from the U.S. Thank you very much for this email. It's good to hear that you follow the world developments, especially the developments regarding the Zionist regime's brutality, especially the Zionist regime's recent attack on Iranian consulate in Damascus, which was in violation of Article 51 of the UN Charter. And as you said, Iran responded to this Zionist regime's brutishness. Iran responded with retaliatory attacks against the Zionist regime's targets. And it's good to hear that you follow the world developments. And as you said, the Zionist regime's attack against Iran violated Article 22 of Vienna Convention and Article 51 of the UN Charter by bombing the Iranian embassy in Damascus on April 1st. And of course, everybody knows that the European regimes, the Western regimes, especially the United States, are complicit in every act the Zionist regime does around the world, whether in Gaza, in Gaza genocide, whether against Iranian, soil, which happened, for example, recently in against Iranian embassy in Damascus, or anywhere in the world. Yes. The Zionist regime, the fabricated child-killing regime of Israel, the Western regimes, and the United States regime are all complicit in any crime. They are hand-in-hand in doing any crime against the world people. Many thanks for writing to us, Mohammad Khaku from the U.S. Write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. Art is long, but life is short. We've come to the end of this edition of Listeners Special. But before saying goodbye, I just wanted to send my appreciations to those of you who have kindly sent us reception reports and emails from around the world, including Mohammad Khaku from the United States, Mohammad Sahadat Hussein from Bangladesh, Mizanur Rahman from Bangladesh, DK Hazarik from India, and also Mr. Anand Mohan Bain from India. Please keep in touch with us. We wish you all the best. God bless you and goodbye.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Muhammad Rizvi.
I've been looking at the passage from Dua Iftitah where the Imam of the time, Hazrat Mahdi Ajallahu Ta'ala Faraju Sharif, describes the qualities, some of the qualities of Amir al-Mu'mineen. To continue with that phrase, where the Imam says, Allahumma wa salli ala aliyyin amir al-mu'mineen wa basi rasul rabbil alameen wa abdika wa waliyik. And then he comes to the phrase which I want to discuss tonight, and that is, wa akhi rasulik, and the brother of your messenger. And therefore in Nahl al-Balagha you will see Amir al-Mu'mineen says very clearly. He says, لا يقاس بعال محمد من هذه الأمة أحد. That when it comes to Ali Muhammad, the family of Muhammad, nobody from the Ummah can be compared to them. They are on a different class. And so even this simple matter of ukhuwah became a mark of distinction for Ali. And he used to take pride in this. There is another incident also related to this concept, and again I'm going by the Sunni historians. Of course we have this in much more detail, where they talk about Ali and they said that in the all the battles of Rasulullah, Ali went with him except in one, and that is the battle of Tabuk, where the Muslim forces were going towards the Syrian border. And Rasulullah asked Ali to stay behind in Medina. And for Ali, it was kind of, you know, he was saying, Rasulullah, you need me more there. You know, you need my strength, my zulfiqar. And Rasulullah said no, because the issue was that there were some hypocrites in Medina who were planning that when the Prophet and the majority of Muslims are gone, they would create fitna and chaos in the city of Medina. To prevent that, Rasulullah wanted to leave Ali behind in Medina. And so just to explain to him in a way, the Prophet says, Ala tarda, O Ali, are you not, you know, pleased? Anta minni bi manzilati Harun min Musa. O Ali, I am leaving you behind. Your position to me is the position of Harun to Musa. إِلَّا أَنَّهُ لَا نَبِيَّ بَعْدِ. The only difference between that relationship and this relationship is that there is no nabuwat after me. And so when you look at this, and there is absolutely no dispute on this narration. And this is actually known as Hadith Manzilat. It's the Hadith of the status of Ali. Because if you look at the relationship of Musa alayhi salam with his brother Harun alayhi salam, both of them were brothers. Number two, both of them were Nabi. And number three, the difference was that Musa was the head and Harun was his assistant, his wazir. And so when we look at this statement that in Islam, you know, we believe that with Rasulullah, the nubuwwat came to end. So that second part of that relationship between Musa and Harun is eliminated. There is no Nabi after Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. But the other two relationships between Harun and Musa is still there. So Ali now becomes the brother of Rasulullah. And Ali also, like Harun, becomes the wazir, and the minister of Rasulullah. And this is where we see that, you know, this was also considered to be a very important event in the life of Amir al-Mu'mineen. And Ali actually used to take pride in calling himself Akhu Rasulullah. Many places he says, I am the brother of Rasul. Nobody got that designation, that affiliation, you know, that relationship with Rasulullah. He was a cousin, of course, but this is more an intensifying that relationship on a religious basis. There is again this narration is from Ahl Sunnah wal Jama'ah, where Ali once said, "Ana Abdullah wa Akhu Rasulihi." I am the servant of Allah, and I am the brother of His Messenger. Wa ana as-siddiq al-akbar. If there is anyone who is the most truthful person, that's me. لا يقولها بعدي. Nobody can claim these titles, أخو رسول الله or صديق الأكبر, after me, إلا كذاب مفتر. But that somebody who is a liar and invents these titles for themselves. Remember, even in the event of Da'wat Zul Ashira, we talked about it in detail. The first formal declaration of Islam done by Rasulullah, there were three things he described about Ali. What was the first one? He says, "Hadha Ali, Akhi wa Wasi wa Khalifati." So even this concept of being brother has been there from day one. And most of the Sunni historians didn't have a problem with the first, you know, description of Ali as Akhi. Even Tabari keeps that intact. But in his tafsir, when it comes to Wasi wa Khalifati, he changes that to Kawa wa Kawa. So this was known among historians that Ali is the brother of Rasulullah. But if you want to see the level of hasad and jealousy and hatred towards Ali, immediately after the wafat of the Prophet, an incident happened where even this issue, where Ali says, "I am the brother of Rasulullah," was being rejected. This is when the people of Saqifa, after planning in Saqifa, they came to the masjid, started asking people to come to the masjid and pledge allegiance to Abu Bakr. Those who refused, those who were close to Ali, they gathered in the house of Fatima. And you know the incident, what happened. The attack which took place, and eventually they arrested Ali and dragged him with the rope all the way to the masjid, which was not that far away. Ibn Qutayba al-Dainawari, in his book Al-Imama wa-Siyasa. Now, you know, many people have questions whether it's authentic or not, but it's not a Shia book anyway. It is a Sunni author, and we are going by his narration. He says they brought Ali to the masjid, and they were insisting on him pledge allegiance. And Ali was saying, "If I don't do it, what will you do?" And this is where they are told. They actually tell Ali, "Wallahi, in the name of God, there is no other God but Him, nadribu unuqak, we will chop off your neck." This is the very early days after wafat of Rasulullah. And when they threaten him in this way, this is where Ali says, "If you kill me, you will be killing the abd of Allah and the akh of Rasulullah. If you kill me, you will be killing the slave of Allah and the brother of His Messenger." And this is where the words are from Ibn Qutayba. He says, "Umar responded by saying that you being the Abdullah, we agree with that. But you claiming to be the Akh Rasulullah, we don't accept it. It's something which had been said from day one in Da'wah Dhul Ashura. Something which had been mentioned in the event of brotherhood in Mecca. Something which Rasulullah had confirmed in the brotherhood event in Medina, now is being denied just few days after the wafat of Rasulullah. And this is where Amir al-Mu'mineen said, I still would not agree to this. And then Umar, according to Ibn Qutaybah, turns to Abu Bakr and he says, issue your command. And that is where Abu Bakr says, as long as Fatima is with him, leave him alone. You know, if you really want to see who rescued Ali bin Abi Talib in that incident, it was Fatima Zahra.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi Karim Azim Alim Halim حاكم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pasttoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23rd, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. Our friends in the negotiating team are aware of our viewpoints. We have discussed the details, those that I'm concerned about, with them. Of course, there are many details that I do not get involved in. We are after reaching an agreement. If someone says that there is a person among the officials of the Islamic Republic who is not after reaching an agreement, they have said a wrong thing. Everyone should know this. All the officials of the Islamic Republic, me, the administration, the Majlis, the judiciary branch, different security and military organizations and the like, share the view that an agreement should be reached. Everyone also shares the view that this agreement should be an honorable one and that the interests of the Islamic Republic should be considered in a careful and scrupulous way. There is no disagreement about this. I, the administration, the Majlis, and every other organization and person share these beliefs and opinions.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The agreement should be a fair agreement, one that ensures the interests of the Islamic Republic. I should add that we are after the lifting of sanctions. Our purpose of entering into the nuclear negotiations is to lift sanctions. We are seriously pursuing the goal of lifting sanctions, but at the same time, we consider sanctions as an opportunity. It should not be the case that some people express surprise at the idea of sanctions as an opportunity. They might say, "How can sanctions, such a bad thing, be an opportunity?" Sanctions made us rely on ourselves. They made us think about our inner capabilities and the pursuit of domestic capacities. That we import everything with oil earnings is the most dreadful disaster and the problem for a country like ours. Unfortunately, this problem has been haunting our country since the pre-revolutionary era, and it is continuing in a very serious way. We should put an end to this. We pursued domestic capacities in the area of science, technology, and different other areas. By Allah's favor, we should do the same in the area of the economy. These were our statements about the nuclear issue.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.